going to listen to a presentation that is
This is eRetailer Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Now the host of eRetailer Conversations with Principal of Profits Plus Solutions, here's your host, Tom Shea, and co-host, Bill Kendi.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the show. Thank you for dialing in and joining us tonight. We've got a great program for you from the comments that I have fielded over the last couple of days after we announced who our guest was. It's been a bunch of questions, a bunch of people calling in and asking questions about it. So we're excited about where the program is. And as we had our warm-up to talk about this earlier, we said, well, we're going to very quickly get into the introductions and get stuff because we have so many items that we want to talk about tonight that Bill and I are going to kind of forego the bantering about. So that being said, from the cold, frozen north, I introduce my good friend, my co-host, and a person who I give credit, a lot of credit to for the format that we use for the show. Shake off the ice. Are you up there, Bill Kendi?
I be here, Tom. I be here. How are you, my friend?
All is well. It's very unseasonably warm in Florida, but
yeah.
I hear cash registers ringing, I hear Salvation Army bells ringing out in front of businesses, and, you know, that's the magic sound that we just love to hear.
Tis the season. And actually, you know, Tom, you referred to us as a frozen north. Everything is relative, sir. You know, today it went up to almost 35 degrees. Yahooies, eh? But considering at the beginning of the week we had a high of 7, that's quite a feat.
Okay, getting down to 58 tonight. I have a jacket on.
Oh, boy, that's so sad.
Hey, so you think we hit it pretty good for tonight's topic, right? I mean, you think we got somebody that, I mean, because you've had conversations, I guess. We've got a topic that we've piqued people's interest.
I think that this subject is something that should be near and dear in every small business owner's heart. Regardless of where they are in the process of their career or their ownership. So an incredibly important thing that is talked about, should be talked about sooner than later. Anyway, I will not pontificate anymore. Yeah,
but you're exactly right. You said it's an item that should be near and dear, and it's an item that every business owner that has ever heard either of us speak, it's an issue that they do have to deal with. What's that old joke about there's two things sure in life, death and taxes?
Yep.
And in a small business, there's a third one, which is there's that time where you decide it's time to move on.
Right.
So here's where we go tonight. Our guest joining us. I heard this gentleman at a conference, so January, when I was in Minnesota, and knew that this gentleman drew quite a crowd, people who wanted to listen to what he had to say. Know it's a topic, and he has told me that from their office they're in the process of writing a book. And I said, oh gosh, I want to read that book. I want to see what it's got to say because it's an item that there's not really a current book about that covers the topic. Our guest tonight comes from a company called Castle Wealth Advisors. They are in Indianapolis. Our guest is a gentleman by the name of Michael Kalshur. And Michael is a senior financial consultant, works with a gentleman by the name of Gary Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, Michael, we picked this song that's playing in the background for you. the Blues Brothers song of Everybody Needs Somebody, for the point of what we just discussed, is that in a business, at some point in time, everybody does come to this point. Everyone does have to come to the day of, what am I going to do with the business that I own when it's time to move on in whatever shape, form, or fashion? And I would think that most people would like to do it while they're vertical as compared to when they have passed and it's left with their family to have to decide what they're going to do with this business.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are some people who do think that they are the exception to the rule and actually will live forever, but I assure you that in my experience I have yet to meet anybody in that position. It's always a good idea to have some kind of a plan in place, and the sooner you can start working on it, really the better off you'll be.
So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. This is the December 2013 through December 19th. A special note, happy birthday to my dad, who, if he were alive, would have been about 89 years old today, third generation of our business. We're recording the session because I've had several people who, hey, are you going to have this? I remember one person particularly. I have our company Christmas party tonight, can't be there to participate, want to listen. So, yes, for Ron, this is being recorded. It will be on the Profits Plus website late tonight, early tomorrow. As soon as Bruce, the information stud, gets it put up there, you can listen to it straight from your computer, or you can take and download it and put it on your iPod. There is no cost for this. During the night, I'm going to multitask. I am on my Facebook page looking to see for questions that come along, and I am watching our email, which is editor at Profits Plus, as well as my personal email, Tom Shea at Profits Plus, for any questions that might come bouncing along that we need to get in front of Michael. But this is a chance for us to talk about the idea that you're going to get out of business, and it's a question I'm often asked about. It's a question that Bill writes plenty about in the articles and the columns that he has done over the years, and then we come across as someone like you, and this is what you do for a living. This is your baby. This is your thing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I'll tell you, I've done a couple of different things in my past and former lives. I used to work at a local bank here in the Indianapolis area, and I've actually sold insurance. So I always tell people that I'm a recovering life insurance agent. You know, it's a 12-step process. Hi, my name is Mike. I used to be a life insurance agent. It's a varied avenue that's brought me to business succession. But I can tell you, it's a great job.
Well, the first question that I think anybody is going to want to ask is, so I own a business or I'm thinking about owning a business. The concept of either selling the business to an outsider, transferring the business to a family member, closing the business down, any way that transfers the ownership from me to somebody else. So I'm thinking about opening a business or I've got a business. When should I first think about the process of how do I get out?
Well, if you're already in business, it's probably a good time to start thinking about it. If you're thinking about starting a business, I don't know if I would necessarily start planning for getting out of it before you actually start the business, although that might not be a bad idea, is to have an exit strategy already in place. But it is always a good idea to start planning ahead. The sooner you start planning ahead, the more flexibility that you give yourself, the more time that you have to assess whether your plan is actually working, and the more time you have to increase the value of the firm that you're eventually going to sell it for.
So you can also then affect the way the taxes are going to hit your business.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and it's always kind of ironic, you know, people ask me all the time, oh, hey, you know, Mike, I'm, you know, 61 years old or 62 years old, and maybe my spouse is in the business with me, and we've been working on the business for 25 years, you know, or 20 years, and we want to sell it. And I say, well, okay, well, based on your experience, how long did it take you to build the business to where it is today? And they said 20 or 25 years. And I go, okay, well, it won't quite take me that long to sell the business, but it does take some time. And it's not something that can be done quickly if you want it done right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think about a person... I don't know if they're on the show with us tonight, but I think of a person who called me one day during 2013, and I would guess you're going to tell me they are the oddity in the sense that someone knocked on the door one day and said, hi, I want to buy your business?
Actually, that happens a lot,
really?
Lot more than you'd think, yes. We get, and that's one thing I do want to clarify. Our firm, we are not a broker or anything of that nature. We are strictly succession and financial consultants. So we're a fiduciary for our clients. We don't buy and sell businesses. We strictly just give advice to business owners. So, you know, no commissions, no, you're not going to get a sales pitch from me. But you'd be amazed how many people, our clients, are routinely, gone after by competitors, by people that are in the exact same business and just want to expand, people who are not in the business, who career change, and they're looking to get into that particular industry, and they want to build. Instead of building a business, they want to buy an existing business, which is always a better way to go. Or it may be we've had clients approached by angel investors and private equity firms that are looking to, their investors want a return on their money. They're expecting that to be invested, and they're looking for businesses to buy.
Yeah. Well, Mike, when I'm talking about the best time for a business to consider selling a business is when you open your doors. Also, at that same time, I don't want to dwell on that part of it too long because we've got a whole bunch of other stuff to cover. But, you know, at that same time, the earlier you start, you know, you should also think about, and I know it's hard to assume what's going to happen 15, 20, 25 years down the road. But when you do get up, do you want to work part-time? Do you want to work full-time? Do you want to, you know, just walk away and be done with it? That has a big part of you trying to figure out your exit strategy, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we always try to stress that, depending on how you're trying to transfer the business, sometimes it's to children who are in the business, sometimes it's to a key manager, sometimes it's to, maybe a friend or someone like that knows the industry. Some of those are going to play in your favor depending on what you want to do, and so you need to do your homework. You need to talk to somebody who's familiar with business sales in your particular industry so they can guide you. For example, if you are looking to, hey, I'd like to work a couple more years and then maybe I'll go part-time and work a couple more years and then eventually ride off into the sunset. Well, again, from personal experience, that's very easy to do if you're selling to a key manager, children, somebody who already is in the business and knows you. That's much more difficult if you're selling it to an outsider or a third party. They usually know the business already, and they're looking to take the reins from you almost from day one.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you get to that point, would you advise them putting together a management team of both? An attorney, you tell me you're the one that's with all the experience in doing that. Who can they consult?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that it really takes a team approach to do this. We never tell anybody you can sell your business on your own, but we always tell people, look, you need to pull together a trusted team who is going to give you good advice and is going to be watching your back. So this includes a good business attorney. May not necessarily be the attorney that you currently work with. That's something that a lot of business owners have run into, is that, hey, my business has grown, and the attorney I was using 15 years ago, he's already retired, and now I'm working with the junior partner. So, you know, maybe you need a new attorney or a different attorney. You need an accountant or somebody who really knows taxes, really knows your situation. And I think you need either a board of directors or other people that can really give you some you know, upfront, honest advice about what the business is really worth and what's a realistic game plan to do that. Now, notice I didn't say you need to hire the local financial advisor or the local broker or insurance agent of that nature. We're big proponents of hiring fiduciaries, somebody who has an obligation to do what's in your best interest. Your accountant has that, your attorney has that, quite frankly, your doctor has that. Not everybody in our industry does. So be very careful who you pick for that team. This is hopefully going to be a one-time shot. You're never going to sell your business again. You want to do it right.
You brought something up that segues into another question that it has a good side and a bad side to it, Michael.
Okay.
And that is, you know, your firm can help a business owner evaluate it. Because mm-hmm. that can be really tough, and it can be expensive, and it can be disappointing, can't it?
That's a great way to put it. It's the value of a company is unfortunately not how much blood, sweat, and tears you've put into the business. I run into a lot of people who look at their business like you know, their restored '67 Chevy or their Corvette that. Yeah, it's part of the family, and they think, or another way to look at it is they say, well, I need X dollars to retire, and you know, I've got a guy who says if I have X dollars in the bank to retire, that's going to be enough money for me to maintain my standard of living, so that's what I have to sell my business for. Well, unfortunately, that may or may not be the actual value of your business. So
that's not the way to do the math.
You have to do the math exactly right.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, but that particular way is not. I mean, my experience from the number of businesses that our family has bought and sold is that I'm going to look, assuming the business has inventory, I'm going to look at inventory at, we'll use the phrase, retail minus a certain percentage. We look at it landed cost, not actual cost. Cost being it's sitting in the building ready to be sold. We're looking at a fair market value for fixtures and equipment and the build-out that's been done, build-out being the how I put the walls and the lights and the carpet and all the stuff that I do.
Sure.
And then I'm going to want to look at the business for a period of multiple years, 2, 3, 4 years, that I want to see the financial history of it. And you know, this is where the term goodwill or blue sky comes into play. This is what the prospective buyer is going to pay for. The fact that here is a proven record, an established business that has been there for a while, and that it is something worth looking at.
Exactly right. And that's an important thing to look at. Obviously, some industries we work in are very inventory heavy, very real estate heavy, and so you know, if you go out there and get a valuation on that business by looking it up on the internet or going to the to your accountant that has done, you know, maybe one or two valuations ever, and maybe not done a valuation in your business, I get very nervous about putting a lot of stock in evaluation that's done on the back of the envelope. You know, when you're getting down to brass tacks and really serious about it, you need to have somebody give you a formalized, very detailed, very accurate, and quite frankly, a frank assessment of what the business is worth. Because in a lot of the industries we also work in, the business as a generator of income is how you're getting the biggest value of your business, not just inventory, not just real estate. It's how much money are you generating from the business. That's what you're selling, and that's where Blue Sky Goodwill comes into play the most.
Yeah, I want to make a statement and ask you a question about that. So in other words, a seller should be, how can I put this, optimistically pessimistic. Right. Well, you know, because like you said, I mean, my 68 Mustang might be worth a lot more to me in value and perceived value than what it is actually worth for a piece of metal with some tires on it. And then the other thing I want to ask you is Blue Sky seems to have this big mystery. How in the world do you? I mean, I'm not one, you know, I'm sure there's formulas and everything, but, you know, just because you're in business doesn't mean you have a good business. And how do you really define what Blue Sky value is? Because there is nothing really to back up Blue Sky.
That's true. That's true. At when it really comes down to it, how are you going to say Coca-Cola's brand name is worth X billions of dollars, or what my particular company is worth, you know, just based on that. So we try to back off of that and say, you know, hey, I've got a reputation in my neighborhood, and that's what draws people in. To really say, look at it, you know, if you're trying to value business, look at it as if you were the purchaser. You know, what would you want to see? And I think Tom alluded to this earlier. You know, okay, well, prove it. You know, show me your financials. Show me your balance sheet. Show me your cash flow. Show me your ups and downs and low points and how much, minimum cash I need to tie up in the business to make it through the dry months to get to the good months. And so it's, you have to be fully prepared to kind of lay your cards on the table to a prospective buyer. Because, hey, if I was buying your company, that's the first thing I would look at. And so it takes, you got to take that into consideration. You got to get your financials. If you don't have your financials in order right now, now's a perfect time to start cleaning those things up and getting them ready to show somebody when you're at that point.
Well, let's take our break. It's We're past the first break. Now let's take our first break right here, and then let's go back. And we've got a person who's been kind enough to give us some information that would be somewhat of an example that we could, while giving this individual advice, we could use this as a pretty good example to share with people. Let me tell everybody as we get ready to take the break, our guest tonight comes from Castle Wealth Advisors in Indianapolis, Indiana, Mr. Michael Kalshur, who is a CFP. CFP stands for Certified Financial Planner, is our guest. If you want to talk to Michael after our conversation, here's the information you want to write down. His phone number is 317-849-9559, and Michael's email is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at Castle 3, the number 3.com. Call that number and you can talk to Michael. And at this point, let's just take our first little quick station break.
This is eRetailer Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network.
So visiting with Michael, as we always do, we tell our listeners, if you want to send your questions in to us, get them to us by Facebook. If you want to send an email, we're always glad to make sure that our guest covers these items. We will take your questions over the items that Bill and I have got. So we had a person who wrote us a letter, and as I promise everyone when they write in or call in, that the names and the story has changed enough so that nobody knows who this is, where it is, because we don't know how much of a particular personal information we're giving away. But we're dealing with a person who bought a business and owned it for 12 years, still continues to own it. And looking at the business over the last 5-6 years, they've done a pretty dadgum good job at what they do in increasing the sales over the years.
I think it can
and this particular
later.
Business owner with their business, and I, my thinking is, and I'll ask Michael this question, I think this affects the taxes. I'm not so sure this is the way I would want to handle it, but has simply never taken a paycheck for themselves, just waits till the end of the year, and it's one of those, whatever's left is what they take home, which I got a question that with regard to appropriate for the taxes, with Social Security or being that comes into play. But in looking at the numbers for this business over the years, that part that the person takes home in a check has also gone up. Up until, you know, and there's that word but that kicks into place, this past year, 2012, and they really, shall we say, took it in the shorts. And the question the person is looking at saying, and I see this person in a certain aspect is kind of disappointed, kind of down on the whole situation, but is looking at a business and saying, I think I'm just going to shut the thing down. Now, Michael, I'm going to ask you. You've seen it. Bill, you've seen it. Michael, you've seen the numbers of what this person has taken out of the business over the years, and you've seen the numbers of what their sales have been over the few years. And looking at the situation, when you have a business owner who has done a good job of working and has taken themselves some nice perks out of it, do you look at a business at this point and say, let's just shut the doors and go home?
Yeah. Oh gosh, I hope not. I mean, that really should be, if not the last thing, it should arguably be the absolute last thing that you do. So I hate to see that at any time, especially if you've had good success like this person has in the past. There's no reason to, you know, walk the plank this early on and just give it up completely. And a couple of things on that, in particular, since you brought up the accounting things, we run into a lot of business owners who have very savvy accountants, and an accountant's job, in my experience, they are very, very good about taking all the numbers that you have and driving as much legal expenses through the business to drive that taxable profit number down as low as possible. So they should, you know, if you guys aren't already doing this, and I'm not trying to give tax advice or anything of that nature, but we have a lot of people who are out there running their cars through the business, a lot of expenses, your cell phone, your computer, your laptop, anything that you use for the business is completely and legitimately a business expense and should be run through there. Now, that drives that bottom line number down, and accountants want that number low for tax purposes, right?
Right. Now, I mean, you do want to run your business where there is a my thought was always a good accountant's job is to have me pay as little taxes as possible and delay it for as many years as I possibly can. And as you say, if I can put my cell phone, my car, my kids, as instead of an allowance, have them picking up trash in the business and pay them a small salary, that's the benefits of small business ownership.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I want to interject here something, though, Tom. Because, yes, it's your obligation to take every single legal deduction you can possibly take from a tax perspective. Right, Michael?
Absolutely.
Now, having said that, I want you to address this, Mike. When you go then to sell a business, some of the things that, yes, you could have taken or you did take and it was perfectly legal, you might want to be in a position to point out that that was something you took, but that not necessarily would might be something that would sweeten the pot for a prospective buyer, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, that's a great way of saying it, Bill. That's exactly right. What we call them add backs, if you will. I mean, there can be a number of different words for them, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to look at the cash that's being generated by the business to make sure that the business sale works and a fair valuation is made. So, for example, if you were hiring your kids and having them, you know, sweep the floor and things of that nature, and paying them a fair rate, you know, you're not paying your kids $50 an hour to sweep the floor or anything, but if you're paying them a fair rate, that is what we would call an add back. You know, so maybe over the course of a year, you're paying $10,000, you know, to your kids to do that. For the new prospective owner, you could legitimately say, look, you know, hey, my bottom line number is X, but really you're not going to have to pay my kids once you own the business.
Right.
That's $10,000 more to your bottom line. So we add that back in for valuation purposes. And there's a slew of those types of things. I mean, it could be, a high salary versus, not in our example here, but it may be a higher salary than the normal interest, depreciation. That's a cash flow thing that you're going to be able to add back. And maybe you have, a country club membership or something. You know,
right.
You take your vendors out to the country club. That's an expense the new owner may or may not have, but you should be able to bring that up in the sales process to say, hey, look at all these things that I have been, you know, doing in the business. You don't have to do those. That's more money that we can use to value the business higher.
Okay. So let me ask this one question before we go to our bottom of the hour break here. And that is, Michael, one of the items that I've read, and this was a professional who says, here's my observation working, and I want to hear your thoughts as a professional. This person said, when we are working with someone who wants to sell a business, and also at that point someone who wants to buy a business, they said, we always have an issue that when a person states, this is my profit, but here's all the expenses that I've hidden in this business that don't really belong there. And the writer in this article that I was reading preceding our conversation tonight said that situation can begin to set up a problem that the prospective buyer is looking at you saying, I think these books are somewhat cooked. I think they played around with stuff here. I'm concerned about that situation. And this writer's comment said, what needs to happen in this situation is that you need to take and say several years, independent upon the type of business you're at and the location of where your business is, you need to take well in advance, say the person, prospective buyer, is going to look at 3 years of your financials, the last 3 years of your ownership of the business, you need to keep the books clean. None of this, you know, all these add backs to it. And at that point, I'm going to ask you to answer the question, and then we're going to go to our bottom of the hour station break.
Okay. Well, and in full disclosure, Tom, I did not read that article, so I can't say exactly where the perspective is from that. And I would definitely agree with part of it, and that is that you need to get your books in order well ahead, 3 years minimum, probably 5 years is what I would recommend. Primarily because the new owner is going to look at that. And so I've seen some really interesting things on some financial statements that, you know, personal loans to children, you know, just stuff that a new owner is going to come in and look at. Hey, if you were really running this as a professional business, that kind of stuff wouldn't be on there, you know. So that you need to clean up your financials. Now, that being said, I think any business owner worth his salt is going to say, hey, if it's, you know, like Bill said, if it's a legitimate business expense, yeah, you really should be running those things through the business. And as the new owner, I understand, hey, some of those expenses I won't have to have, and so those are legitimate things that I can use
right.
that cash for something else.
Okay. All right, so it's bottom of the hour. Well, it's well past bottom of the hour. Let's stop at this point. Let me tell everyone, from Castle Wealth Advisors in Indianapolis, our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Kalscher, certified financial planner, and he's a senior financial consultant at Castle. Castle is located in Indianapolis. Michael's email is michael@castle3.com, and you can reach Michael by phone, 317-849-9559. And as we were talking, and Michael made a comment somewhere there about in selling your business and getting out of the business, that it was time for you to ride off into the sunset, I think was your phrasing. And with that being said, I found a piece, Michael, that I thought would be very appropriate. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. And, Michael, I think this song speaks to it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails.
This is PBN.
So, yes, this is PBN, Profitable Business Network. Bill Kendi is always my sidekick here.
Hello, Mr.
Tom Shea here. Michael Kalscher to join us with Castle. So, Michael, when we read this person's letter, I mean, I could understand the person who is saying, I want to just shut the whole stupid thing down. I mean, the person said, I'm tired, I'm cranky, I want out. I have a lease that comes up at a relatively close period of time and says, I think I'm nuts if I were going to sign on for another years of this. And the person is telling a story, they're stressed with it, you know, but your comment back to the person says, wait a minute, you could pick up a nice check if you'd sell the business because you've got a nice track history of how your sales have increased over the years and the amount of money that you've taken out of it. You could do pretty good for yourself or for your kids or for your favorite charity by selling it, as well as you could do all the world a bit of good, because you would be keeping another independent business out there as an alternative to people going and shopping the big box stores.
Absolutely right. I'm as a small business owner myself, that's something that I'm always excited to do, to be able to continue on a family business or just a small business in the local community, because it's such an important part that they play. And realistically, it's an unfortunate thing to see somebody say that, because that tells me we waited a little too long. You know, you want to sell the business when you still have a little gas in the tank, a little fire in the belly, and what you're looking for is somebody else, maybe younger, maybe not, but definitely somebody else who's going to be willing to put in some long hours and maybe insert some capital, you know, and do some things that, you know, quite frankly, maybe you just aren't in that position or don't want to do that anymore. But there's somebody else out there who might be willing to do it if you just take the time and effort to find them. And it's sometimes people think, oh, you know, who would ever want my business? And I can tell you, there are plenty of people whatever your industry, whatever your customer base, whatever headaches that you'd have to go through, you've already taken lumps and you could save somebody. Your knowledge, your expertise, your experience is valuable. Your business is valuable.
So I like the comment about the gas still in the tank. Before you're just dead beat and exhausted and you yourself start running it into the ground, then what you're saying, hey, do something with the thing, sell the thing, get somebody else involved.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. We work many times with owners who are on, I would say, when I talk to people, 3 years is what I tell people is a minimum to start a transition plan. You got to clean up your financials. You probably have some employees, maybe managers. You know, they need some training. You know, they're not ready to take the reins, or they're not really ready to run the shop without you being around there. So it takes time to train people. The appearance of the building needs, you know, do you need some painting? Do you need some new signage? Is the do you have big cracks in the a parking lot? You know, you need to. I mean, people talk about fixing up their house to sell it. You know, you tidy things up, you vacuum, you clean, you paint, you do stuff like that. Hey, a business is no different. Curb appeal makes a huge difference, but at the end of the day, it's really the people that are still there that are really going to be profitable for that new owner.
Kind of like the person who thinks they're going to go trade in their car for a new one, and they go out and spend a chunk of money and have the car they got now detailed so it looks best in front of the eyes of the person who's going to evaluate it for as a trade-in.
Have you guys ever seen that program called Love It or List It?
Yes, I'm familiar with that. That's right.
It's kind of the same concept.
Yeah. So do you take some money and gussy it up and sell it, or do you take some money and gussy it up and keep it? Either way, you got to invest a little bit of money to make that decision.
Two questions are kind of like joined at the hip. Let's say that you do have somebody, you decide to try to keep it, you know, not just sell it to an outright stranger, but keep it. Mm-hmm. And let's say you have a talented manager. You know, you're going to say, well, this guy, he's got an interest, he's got capability, this person. And then I want you to address what the training requirement should be. But before we get into the second part of the question, what do you do if you have family, other siblings or, you know, kids rather, and, you know, you got somebody in the family that wants it, but really isn't qualified to run the business? You know, how do you do that? What advice, Tom, you might be able to do it because you had family involved when you were in your store business. How do you do that to keep everybody happy? You still got a family, you know, you got to live with.
Yeah, exactly right. And most of the time, you've got a situation where there's one, you know, three, four kids, and one of them is in the business, you know, and so you've got these outside kids who, you know, you feel bad. You're like, hey, I want to give them something of value. You know, I want Junior to have some value, but my daughter is really the one that's running the show, and that's the one. And so, that's all in deal structure and how you put the plan together. There's lots of ways to do that, you know, voting stock, non-voting stock, you know, 51% ownership versus 49% ownership, so majority, minority. There's lots of things that you can do, but I'll tell you, the number one thing is just communication. You know, when you are in that position where you're starting to think about these, don't just assume that your daughter who's been working for you for 15 years or your son that's been in the business for 20 years, don't assume that they want to own it. Talk to them. Talk to your other kids. Talk to them about what you're thinking. Because if they don't want it, you don't want your game plan to be, hey, 5 minutes before I'm ready to walk out the door, I'm going to tell my son it's his business, you know, or sell it to him, and then him say no, puts you in a pickle.
Now, let's look at that one in a second, but we've got to take a break here at this point because
cash in Verizon points.
Right. We've got to talk about the idea of we have another program coming up in about 30 days. And
yes. And who are we going to have with that, Tom?
Glad you asked that.
I thought you would be.
Bill, it's going to be a new year, 2014. New year means turn the page on the calendar, new month. And for our call for January, I'm looking for some new ideas. So I have decided to go north of the border, way north of the border, and bring a friend of mine in as our guest. This lady I have known for a number of years. I see her around at trade shows and conferences, and she also is a counterpart over on the north side of the border because she is the representative for Independent Retailer Month in the nation of Canada. Our guest for January is going to be from Retail Makeover, Barbara Crowhurst. Barbara, you there, my friend?
Yes, my goodness, Tom. Thanks very much. And Bill, thank you very much for inviting me to be on your show today. Well, we have an absolutely exciting, exciting power hour ready and willing to share information with your listeners. Going to start off with talking about how important it is to really look at your financial numbers. So reviewing the past, looking into the future. I'm going to look at how important profit and loss statements are, setting sales targets, buying budgets, operating costs, whether you're profitable, whether you should be projecting the right focus on sales. And really, here's the key on this one point, is really bringing ownership to the business and making sure that you're working on your business, not in your business. Also going to touch on marketing and promotional ideas and how they drive your business for 2014, and then with a bit of a focus on implementing internet and social media strategies. So that's going to be very interesting as we explore that. And then to finish our time together, we're going to focus in on the sales culture of a business. So I'm going to share my expertise along with our shared comments about creating an effective sales focus and how it all comes together to have a major impact on sales. So in that short time we're going to have together, I'm even going to teach you how to increase sales the very next minute after our program is finished. So it's going to be an exciting hour. Thanks.
Well, that would be great. We'll have a good time, and you think that she can get all that information squeezed in one brief hour. So it's going to be a great way to start off January of 2014. Barbara, we are thrilled to have you with us for next month, I guess, other than simply say stay warm and be ready for sharing some great information. We're thrilled to have you.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah, so that would be fairly well packed an hour, good. That may be a whole lot longer now. We'd have to be multiples. All right, I got two items because I mean we're down to minutes that we have left. We have so many more items that we somehow thought we could get all in front of Michael tonight. I've got two items, Michael. I want to make sure get addressed for people, and one of them comes from the number of people who have a situation similar to what I did, and that is a family business, multiple children in the business, or multiple children. One, maybe two children that are in the business, the rest that are not. And a challenge that comes up is that when that child works in the business, works to make the business better, and then when it comes time to buy the business, buy the parents out, you have an effect that child is working against themselves. If they've worked with the parents for 10, 15, 20 years, to help make that business more valuable, and then you do a valuation of the business the day the parents want to sell it, that kid has helped to make a business become a whole lot better, and you're asking him to buy his own work.
That's a very astute point, and that is something that is not lost on the next generation. They look at that and go, okay, let's see, I'm gonna double the value of this company. which means, you know, 5 years from now it's going to be worth twice as much, which means I'm going to have to pay twice as much for it. Or if it comes, you know, and then typically what happens is if a business is passed by inheritance or something, you know, I pay twice as much and I get a quarter of the value if I'm splitting it up with my siblings or something. And so that's why, again, it's very, very important if you're selling within the family, we strongly recommend to start actually changing ownership several years in advance. And so I just was working with a client, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and this year we started transitioning stock, and it's not a huge portion, 2% of the company, okay? Something small, something that's manageable. 2%, she gave 2% to her son. She gave another 2% to her key manager, and she's going to do this for a five-year time period. And the thinking here is that we can now, and you know, us as the consultant and her as the owner, can go to the next generation and say, look, I want you to work hard. I want you to build the business. I'm going to give you this stock today with the idea that you'll buy the rest of it 5 years from now. But, hey, if you double the value of the company in 5 years, you've doubled the value of the stock that I've just given you. So now instead of being an adversarial type of situation where they're working against themselves, now they see, hey, mom and dad have a plan. I'm included in the plan. I'm putting money in my pocket really from day one because now I'm an owner. And that's just that little change can make a huge, huge difference down the road. P.S., that also is kind of a golden handcuffs, if you will, with our corporate executives that we work with,
right.
You know, stock options and things. Small businesses don't have that, but a little bit of ownership, you better believe they're not just going to walk out the door for a job with somebody else once they own part of the company.
Well, I know our family business that when my parents bought the last business we owned, we had an agreement that we valued the business. I mean, we knew what we paid for it the day that we made the purchase, and our agreement was that we would value it again on the day that my parents sold it to me, and whatever the increase was that occurred over the years, 50% of the increase was automatically mine, and 50% of the increase remained with my parents. So whatever other money I wanted to come up with was to my benefit, but I knew that if the business increased in value by $1, 50 cents of the dollar was of that increase in value was my 50 cents.
That's a fantastic way to do it, and that's the joy and beautiful thing about owning your own business is that you can customize that to your particular family situation literally an unlimited number of ways. And so that's a great solution that might work, but there's other equally great solutions depending on everybody's needs.
The key is there's got to be a solution.
Absolutely. There's always a solution. Just have to look under enough rocks to find it.
We just don't want the solution after the fact.
Well, that's, you know, if you wait till the last minute, my experience is that sometimes you don't find what you think you're going to find, and that can be a pretty rude awakening at the last minute.
So it's time to take the last station break of the night. We're going to come back, and I've got one more question that I want Michael to kind of pound on. Let me take a station break, and we'll do one last more round with Michael.
All right.
This is the Profitable Business Network.
And this is Tom Shea, and this is Bill Kendi, telling you that Mr. Michael Kalscher of Castle Wealth Advisors is our guest tonight. To find Michael, because obviously he's got a lot of knowledge and there's a lot of questions that people would like to ask. Michael's in Indianapolis. Phone number 317-849-9559. You can get him by email, michael@castle3, spell the word castle, the number 3.com. And either of those two will get you to our guest night. This is an item that's near and dear to your heart. And from the number of people who have called and written in, we know this is an important issue. This is how to get a hold of him. So, Michael, in the about 5 minutes that we have left, there's an item that I think needs to be looked at from two points here. One of them is when you are selling the business, particularly in people with small business products and all, it's tough to expect somebody is going to walk in the door with cash to pay you 100% right there on the spot for your business.
Yep.
The logic I have always used to say, if I've got $100,000 to buy a business, do I want to pay you $100,000 and own a business that's worth $100,000, or would I like to put $100,000 down on a $500,000 business, and which one of the two, the $500,000 or $100,000, do you think can pay me as the owner a bigger salary? And the fact that the interest in paying it off is a business expense, I don't think you really need to be looking that someone's going to walk out there with cash in hand and just buy you out in one fell swoop, which then says, well, then there's going to be a payment to you over some point in time. I've told you this before, Michael, gladly respect any disagreement. A Tomism is absolutely, positively, never, ever, ever do you accept your own business as collateral in a loan.
Well, yeah, my experience has been that there are people out there who will write you a big check. However, the flip side of that is that they're going to usually want to write the rules. So this comes back to something that Bill mentioned earlier. You know, if you wanted to stick around for 18 to 24 months, maybe work part-time, something like that, most people writing a big check, they're usually already in the business. You know, maybe they already own 1, 2, 5, 10 stores just like yours. Or 10 businesses just like yours. And they're looking at it not only from, hey, this is a great business, but I'm going to get some synergies because I don't have to pay your IT person. I don't have to pay your HR, your back office. I already have all that stuff. So they can afford to write a big check. But they're also going to say, You turn off the lights 5 o'clock Friday night, hand me the keys, and it's mine Monday morning at 8 a.m. And there is nothing else. It's they dictate everything. They're going to be driving that decision making. Whereas if you are selling it over time, usually to a key manager or kind of your children who aren't going to be able to write you a large check like that, they can probably pay you more over a period of years using the cash flow that's being generated by the business. And then it gets really exciting because you can say, well, you know what? I'm not going to pay you, say it's $1 million business. I'm not just going to pay you a $100,000 salary for 10 years and be on your way. Maybe we're going to give you deferred compensation. Maybe we're going to put you on the board of directors, and the board of directors meetings are going to be in Maui on an annual basis, which is, of course, paid for by the company. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really fun, exciting things you can design, good for you, the seller, because you're getting income that you need for retirement, and good for the buyer, because most of those are business expenses. They can write that stuff off. Whereas if they're just buying stock, can't take a tax deduction for stock payments. So,
well, the key is that they need to do whatever they can do to make that cash register ring. And that's a sound we all like to hear, right, Tom?
That's a favorite. Well, now, Michael, then you also, it's nice to think of you've got the cash on the table when you sell the business. The other side is, and we'll use that proverbial $100,000, is now – that money's all taxable right up front. If you work a deal with the person that is buying your business and get the money over time, and you swap it out from this perspective of I stay on as an advisor, a consultant, whatever, and stretch the money payments to me over a period of time, working with my accountant, I can diminish my tax liability.
Well, kind of.
That's exactly right. We love to see that where you have the owner still involved, getting payments over time, you know, keeping you out of those higher tax brackets, and giving you non-taxable benefits that are just as good or maybe even better than just a straight salary or something like that. And then you can even put something like an earn-out provision. So, for example, hey, the proverbial million-dollar business, and it's a 10-year payout, but if the owner stays on and is able to help management increase sales, you know, X percent per year, or retain X percent of the clients, you know, to ensure that profitability, maybe the payments are total to $1.2 million or $1.3 million or some kind of an earn-out to keep that. It gives confidence to the buyer because you've got that owner still involved, and it gives more money to the seller. Those are really win-win situations when you can do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of win-wins, we have used a whole hour. We have taken all of our time. Last time to tell everybody where to find him. Michael Kalscher, Castle Wealth Advisors, Indianapolis, Indiana. Phone 317-849-9559. Email is Michael at Castle, the numeral 3.com. Michael, can Bill and I ask you to come back and join us somewhere down the line, and we could take and address some more of these issues, because we sure have a lot that we did not get covered tonight.
Oh, it would be my pleasure. I'd appreciate that.
Good. Good. All right, Mr. Shea. Michael, thank you, sir. Time is
time for the noise?
I think it's time for that sound. I alluded to that.
I heard you. Here we go. It's time to go. Hey, everybody. Michael, we thank you. Everyone who joined us tonight, we thank you. Bill, you know I appreciate you putting your time in to make this thing work, all the research that you do and helping us find Michael and all the research on Ryan. Thank you very, very much, sir.
Oh, it's always an honor, guys. Thank you.
Time to go, guys.
It's been our pleasure to share fresh ideas and trends from premier small business owners, coaches, and resources. Join Tom Shea and guests again next month for e-retailer conversations right here on PBN, the Profitable Business Network.